Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 56. This is Jamie Russo. Thanks for listening. I am glad to be back. I promised a few weeks ago that I would give you an episode on the data from the Global Workspace Association's member survey, and then I got very distracted with prepping for our upcoming conference. So I apologize for running a little late on that, but I am back, and next week's episode is already recorded, so we will be ready to roll next week as well. So the topic of the conference, it's about 40 days away, which seems crazy. We've been doing some serious planning. Our speaker list is updated. The agenda's finalized. We are really excited. We have some great new vendors this year. Great format for the agenda. If you are a new operator, we have a special offer for you. We are trying to attract new folks and show them what an amazing value the conference is. In my mind, there's nothing better you can do for your business than to attend a conference, and you never know what might happen. I have some good personal stories about great things that have happened to me at conferences through the people that I've met there. Not necessarily the content, which is, of course, important, and we spend a lot of time on that, but the relationships you build and the people you meet, and you never know, just like in coworking, what kind of serendipitous interactions you're going to have. So if you're working on a space and you're really interested in checking it out, send me an email at jamie@everythingcoworking.com, and we have a new operator code to get you a discount on that ticket fee. So on to this week's episode. So you might remember, if you've listened to episode number 55, then you know we distributed two surveys this year. One is a survey to operators that asks for P&L data to help us get some financial benchmarks for the industry. And if you have not listened to that episode, go back and listen. I think it's one of the most compelling episodes and has a lot of good information in it. And then this week, we're going to share the results from our member survey. So this survey went out to members of co-working and shared workspaces, and we have not run this survey before. We've historically only done a survey to operators. So this was our first year. We had some really interesting insights. So I'm going to share the insights in the episode today. If you want a PDF of those insights all laid out for you, you can text 44222 and we'll send it to your email. I'll also include a link to the download in the show notes at everythingcoworking.com/56. And I should also mention again with my GWA hat on that if you are a member, you get the detailed report for both the operator and the member data. So that's members only get the full reports. It's only $297 a year to join. So if you're in the process of opening a space or you're talking to investors, this data can be really, really useful. So I encourage it. Okay, so let's dive into talking about our insights. First, let me give you an overview of the survey respondents, because I think it's always really important to have context. The data is the data from a sample size, and that's what it is, right? If you have a different sample size, you may have different data. So always have your hat on about, you know, being sort of having a healthy questioning attitude about, you know, who makes up the survey data. So we had 526 respondents, about 50-50 male-female, 53% male, 47% female. 35% of the respondents were 35 to 49, and the rest were kind of spread across the other age groups. 78% are from urban areas, which I think is important to note. So this is, you know, sample primarily comes from cities. 33% of the respondents identify themselves as working in a co-working space, 56% from a serviced office, and 9% flexible office offered by private businesses, which is interesting because that's almost 10%. That's a pretty good chunk. So we will jump right into our top insights. So the first one is co-working space members, at least for this sample, are not just tech startups. And, you know, I keep hearing people talk about in Facebook groups and whatnot that this is still a perception that co-working is bro-working or fraternity-like. And for those of us in the industry, we feel like that's pretty clear at this point, but know that you may struggle with that in your community. So again, based on our sample size, 47% work for small businesses, 20% are solopreneurs or freelancers, 12% work for large companies, and only 7% of our respondents identified themselves as a member of a technology startup team. So again, sample size is important, and this makeup will vary in your market, but good to know what your marketplace is made up of and who your demand will come from and who you're trying to serve so that you can design your space and design your marketing and your branding all to meet that. Another myth that we keep sort of harping on, and tell me when you're done with me talking about this, 65% of serviced office respondents reported working in an office, but 38% of co-working respondents did as well, and 26% of co-working respondents reported working at a dedicated desk where they could leave their belongings overnight. So a combined 64% of co-working respondents work in some sort of dedicated workspace versus hot desks, which is a pretty high percentage. So again, I probably sound like a little bit of a broken record on this point if you listen to my podcast and talking about this data, but I think it's an important insight for folks starting spaces to understand that there are markets in which you can do an open plan and a mostly open plan, but in many, it doesn't work. And I haven't posted about this, but there were two spaces in Chicago that closed recently, Grind and Next Space. And Grind did an interview with the Chicago Tribune and basically said that they had the product wrong for the market, that they needed more private space and that they didn't have a good way at this point to alter the space to support it, and it didn't work. And the other piece of that is having one location in another market. So Grind is mostly in New York. All of its other locations are in New York, and then they had just one in Chicago, and that was logistically challenging. And I can attest to that, having operated a space in Chicago while living in Palo Alto and having a space in Palo Alto as well. So know your market, know what's happening in the overall market, which is that we're seeing more private space, certainly not 100% private space, but more. And make sure you're really thoughtful about that before you do your design and your business model and open up. So let's see what else. 69% of members that pay for their own workspace. So I thought this was an important aspect to distinguish in the responses. We asked respondents to indicate whether they pay for their workspace or if an employer does, because we thought there would be some different insights based on who's paying. And I'm glad that we did ask that, because we found certainly some variation. And again, it's something to think about if you're starting a space. Who's your target market? Will it be mostly freelancers, or will there be small teams where somebody's making a decision and then other people have to go where sort of the boss indicates they need to go? So 69% of our members, or the members responding to the survey, that pay for their own workspace travel less than 20 minutes to get to their shared workspace. So that says to me, if a member is footing the bill and is in control over that location selection, commute time is super important. 58% of members whose employers chose the location commute less than 30 minutes. So still, whoever's making the decision is trying not to make the commute a big problem for most of the team, but it's a little bit longer on average, which makes sense, because if you have a team of people, you probably have more variation in where people live. But think about that. You know, most members are traveling less than 30 minutes to get to your space. And this could be by public transportation, by car, by walking, by bike. We didn't actually ask that question, which we'll have to do next year. But again, understand your market, think about your location, get some data on who's in your radius, your 30-minute radius, and make sure the right people are there and that there are enough of them. Your real estate broker should be able to help you with that data piece. So make sure you know your target market, find that real estate professional that has the data, and really work hard on that 30-minute radius. And it's important here, I would encourage finding a location with the right people in the right radius before selecting the specific space, because the problem with real estate and people who are passionate about co-working is you'll find a space that you can picture your community in, and then your community will not be close enough to you. So don't get emotional first. Find your geographic area that has the density that you need, and then find the space in that region. All right, so we've talked about the fact that co-working members are not just startups. In fact, mostly they're small businesses and solopreneurs, and a growing number of corporate employees. high percentage of folks working out of dedicated spaces, whether that's offices, team offices, or dedicated desks, and then people who pick their spaces like to be close to home. So those are the first few insights. So jumping into the next one, we asked members to indicate their number one reason for joining. And interestingly, from this sample size, the number one reason for these folks was that their employer is located. So we had a large number of people whose employer chose the space, which is interesting. And again, something to think about when you're thinking about your space, that this is not all, you know, business owners and freelancers who are making their own decision. You'll get people whose bosses are making the decision for them. But that aside, because I feel like that's a tough one, not super interesting, except for the fact that you need to be thinking about, you know, your members are not all necessarily the ones paying the bill. The second most reported reason was to join a community. And the third is to seek opportunities to expand business and network. So these are the things we think are valuable to a co-working space, and it turns out that they are. So our members are actually reporting that those are the reasons that they're joining. For serviced office respondents, their number one reason was to have a professional setting in which to meet clients, which probably makes sense. Serviced office also caters to small business, but you'll get attorneys, you know, lawyers, other professional service folks who need conference rooms and offices in which to meet clients. And then the second for the serviced office was that their employer chose the space. And then the third was to join a community, which I also think is important because I think there's a little bit of a sense that serviced office folks tend to just want an office, and there's, you know, they're sort of really focused on the value of the space. But one of their top, you know, one of the top three responses was community as well. So they are humans as well. Okay, so the next insight is that respondents reported learning about their current workspace mostly through Google, which makes sense. So 36% said they found their space through Google. But then the second most reported way of finding about their workspace is by word of mouth, which was at 31%, so just slightly below the search engine. So one of those requires a lot of resources against staying relevant in the search engines and probably putting some marketing budget against Google AdWords. And the other one could be free and at least involves having a low-cost program that encourages your members to tell their network about you. So we saw this in the operator data as well, which is a little bit surprising to me. So both sides are reporting that search engines are important, but word of mouth is a really, really big tool, and that you can find members through word of mouth. So it's important to make sure that you are encouraging this. So it can be a natural behavior. People have a great experience, they tell a friend, but you might want to remind people to do it and give them a reason. Give them a postcard with a free day pass or a free month, or have a program where if the member refers a new member, they each get $200 off of their first month. It's not necessarily the right number for everyone or every membership, but something like that. So definitely do not discount the value of word of mouth. Super important to keep in mind. And then the other thing that I thought was interesting is that members, only 3% of members reported finding their space through social media. Now remember, this data is all self-reported, so it may not be exactly right, but I think what we're hearing is, look, social media was not a huge factor in me making this decision, which I think is important because I think a lot of co-working space operators struggle with social media and sort of what, you know, content, what's the objective, how much resource to put behind it. So I think it's important from a branding perspective and showing your personality and engaging with the local community, but know that it may not be driving people into your sales funnel. So just keep that in mind when you're allocating your marketing resources, both dollars and human time. What is next? Oh, so we asked respondents which environmental attributes they most value, which I was personally curious about, because I think as owners, we have personal biases, you know, about what's most important to people. Is it natural light? Is it the coffee? Is it meeting spaces? So interestingly, most people, and this is across all respondents, chose professional setting. The next most selected response was cleanliness, which I thought was interesting. So I don't know exactly what that means, except that maybe people don't, you know, the coffee shop's not super clean, the home office is not super clean, like their alternative choices maybe not as clean, and that's something they really appreciate about a professionally managed space. And then the third most selected response was aesthetics, which you know, we could tease that out a bit more. So natural light was on the list. So I wouldn't put natural light in with aesthetics. But on the other hand, respondents may sort of incorporate that into their response. So I would guess this sort of overall means, you know, design, furniture, colors, which to me are all really important. I think some of us are more design sensitive than others, but this was the third most selected response. So I thought that was interesting and something to think about as you're deciding whether to hire someone to help you with your space. If you're opening a space, it may be worthwhile to hire a professional designer to help you with that process and make sure you nail those aesthetics. Because most of us may think of ourselves as amateur designers because we're all so subjected to it with HGTV and Instagram and all the beautiful things that you can be inspired by, but it's hard to actually execute, especially in a workplace environment. So get the professionals involved. And then the last insight, we asked members for their wish list for their space. And I thought we'd see things more like, I'd love it if I could bring my dog or my kid or things like that. But those did not get the top choices. The top answer was actually that it be more affordable, which I was a little bit surprised about as well, because I think if you deliver on community and business building and productivity and all the other things they appreciate about their workspace, I would think they'd be a little bit less sensitive about the price. But that's what came up in the survey responses. The second was more meeting spaces, which again, I thought was interesting and something to keep in mind if you're creating a space. I think we've talked about this on other episodes, and I don't know the episode number off the top of my head, but Cloud VO, which is a GWA member, did a webinar once that was pretty eye-opening for me, and they said their data shows that workspaces with multiple conference rooms, and the magical number seemed to be 5 of varying sizes, get the most meeting room revenue. And they thought that was because when there's a variety of spaces, somebody comes to use the space and see what else is available. And the next time they need space, they immediately think of that as a solution, knowing that there are other sizes of rooms and configurations, et cetera, that they can use, and they've had experience in the space, so they can just go back. Whereas if you only have 1 or 2, not as many options, the room might be booked, might be not the right size or configuration, so you get less meeting room revenue. So if you're baking meeting room revenue into your business plan, then consider having multiple meeting rooms, and also consider this data point that members wish they had more meeting rooms. And there's also always the debate about whether or not you charge members for meeting room time. We do, I think it's common, give a certain number of hours for free and then charge after that. And I think this is a good indicator that if members want more meeting rooms, then they value it. And if they value it, they should pay for it because you're paying for it, right? You're paying rent on that space. So know that it's valued and know that members are asking for more, at least in our sample. And then the third, not super interesting, probably fairly obvious, but important for space selection is better parking, which is important for both members and visitors. Having operated a space in urban location where there was no parking and we were not as close as we could have been to public transportation, we did not do a ton of meeting room revenue because it was harder for people to get to and harder for people to invite guests. Whereas in Palo Alto, we have a nice big parking lot with free parking, so our meeting room revenue is much higher and it's very easy for people to invite guests or have meetings there. Oh, and this is also an important note. So those responses that I presented are for the combined responses for both co-working space and serviced office users. I would note that for co-working, the third most popular response on the wish list question was faster Wi-Fi, which is a bit concerning because Wi-Fi is one of the foundational pieces of running a shared workspace. You want to make sure you get that right. Do not try to do it yourself. Get some professional help. And I will put a couple of suggestions for that in the show notes. We have some GWA members who support that and generally will have a local partner that can help out. So if your Wi-Fi is questionable, make sure you fix it. And if you are looking for a space, make sure that that's really high on your list of requirements. So that's it for our top insights from the member survey. Like I said, show notes, everythingcoworking.com/56. And you can get the download of these insights, a lot of numbers and a lot of stats thrown around. So it'll probably be easier to have something that's printed to reference. And next week, we have Matt Going from Anytime Mailbox talking about the growth of digital mailboxes. And that's going to be a good one. So stay tuned and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.